Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is March 2nd at the date of this show, 2017. I am so glad to be here, folks. I was just waiting. I was just saying, hey, wow, 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Come on, 6 o'clock. And my guest today, once again, she's returning, is author Dr. Rosie Kuhn on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She was on the show a few weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago. And she was so good. And she provided so much insight into what she was talking about, and I just the listeners, I've gotten a lot of feedback from that, so I invited her back, and you know, and she graciously agreed. Well, she graciously accepted, put it that way. All right, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Proud to be here, folks. I'm so glad. You know, we will be off tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday. We will be back on Monday. But let's do the show today. Let's not talk about that today. We'll talk about that towards the end of the show. Okay. All righty. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Once again, folks, I've been on the air almost 3 years. I wish I could have done this a lot earlier, a lot sooner. But I didn't know how much I would like it. I was pressured. With ads and things and advertisement on doing a show, I think around 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little earlier, but I didn't see myself as it. But I wish I could have, 10, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I wish I could have done a radio show like this. You know, I mean, and a lot of people think that this show, just because it's internet and it's over the air, that it's not, when I say over the air, I mean, supposedly all around the world. that it's not a good show. A lot of people have podcasts. Anybody can get one as long as you can afford it, because they're costly. Believe me, they're costly. And you have to have the talent to do so. Like, if I should leave Black Talk Radio, I can be able to take this show anywhere I want to, because I own the name. I'm the brand. I'm the brand of the show. Let's say if Black Talk Radio, the officials, the people who run this thing, who I'm paying, decided that they didn't want the George Wilder Jr. show anymore on their network. And so that would be no problem for me, because the name says it all, the George Wilder Jr. show. I could do this show anywhere, anytime, even on over there will air traditional radio, because so many people know the show. And even if Black Talk Radio tries to limit the amount of space that this show has, the amount of listenership that this show is going out to, and if I find that out, you know, then I'm gone. I mean, I don't want no one restricting people from listening to this show, because I am the bearer. I am the customer. So if I find out this show doesn't reach the places that it used to reach because of so many changes coming to this to Black Talk Radio, and if I don't like the changes, if it's the type of changes that are going to limit my time on the show, it's going to limit your voice or your listenership to this show, I have to go. You know, that's not going to happen. I mean, you know, because you got a lot of these programs like this that they're changing. Every time you look around, they're making some kind of change, you know, and most of the time when Black Talk Radio and some of these other internet radio outlets make changes, it's not good for the host. It's not good for the people who are listening or following the show. I'm not saying that what they are doing or what they have done is to limit my exposure to the outside world on this show. I'm just saying if I find out that it's curtailing some of these things that I used to have on the show, then I'm done with it, because I can take my show, my name, anywhere, and profit for myself, and profit for the outlet that is hosting my show, the George Wilder Jr. show. You know, so if you guys notice any changes, anything, you can't get the show. It's not if you notice any changes, whereas you used to listen to the show, but you can't get the show, or if someone out there knows someone who's talking about, well, we can't get the George Wilder Jr. show anymore because of some changes by Blog Talk itself. You know, the reason why I've stayed with Blog Talk Radio, which I don't have to, I really don't. And the reason why I stayed, because I know the format of the show. I know the format of the show. If I didn't know the format of the show, I would probably have been gone a long time ago. But I know the flow of the show. I know it's easier than a lot of other formats. But, you know, just like any other format, you have to get used to it. You have to know it. And that's one of the reasons why I stayed with it as long as I have, because there's times I should have gone. I've been approached by other radio outlets, but I turned them down simply because I didn't have time to learn a format. I knew the format of the Blog Talk Radio show, so I stayed with it, you know. But if they're going to start messing around, that's what people do, folks. Whenever they see that you have been with them for a while and you've been somewhat successful, you're somewhat popular, these folks start tweaking things, and they start sending you all kinds of messages and notes about this or that, using terminology that you barely can understand. So when somebody uses terminology towards me and this show that I don't understand, I figure, hey, wow, that's gotta be not good, because if it was good, they would make it, you know, simple. You know, if they start using words like I never heard of, or I got to get a dictionary to find out what it means, or if I got to call in to some representative and they have to explain it to me, you know, I figure this is not good. This is not good. So if anybody out there, if you can't reach the George Wilder Jr. Show, if you know someone or someone knows you and you're talking about you can't reach it, it's not getting here, it's not going beyond what it used to go, let me know. If there's something wrong, you know, you can't get it because, like I said, I'm not obligated to these people and they're not obligated to me. I mean, I can get the hell up and go somewhere else and be welcomed, you know. So, like I say, I'm footing the bill for this. It's costing me not just what I pay to have this screen here, the Block Talk Radio screen, the studio here, but also what I'm paying for my own individual, the roof over my head in order to have the show. So it's expensive. It's not free. And I have yet to see a profit, if ever. But I do it because I enjoy it. And it's fun. I get a lot of things off my chest, you know. People have been talking and saying, hey, George, are you going to get a co-host? I don't think I need a co-host. But every now and then, I'll have someone to co-host the show. I've had my son co-host with me. And I don't think so. I think I can do the show by myself. But I don't think I have to shell out a few dollars for someone to sit beside me and just, you know, you know, I think it's good in some cases. I'm not knocking people who radio show hosts who do have co-hosts, you know. So maybe it's something I'll look into the future, but it's another expense, I think, because, you know, nobody's going to, everybody wants some, you can't have something for nothing. And to me, having a co-host, I think it's a great thing. I think it's a good thing. I know a few people who are capable, maybe capable of doing it. But I'm pretty sure they would say, hey, wow, I got to be paid. And I'm saying, why would I pay people to do something that I can do? So we'll see about something like that during the future. But anyway, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And like I said, we have author Dr. Rosie Kuhn on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And we got a lot more. We're going to talk about Donald Trump. I mean, everybody's Jeff Sessions, everybody's talking about it. So we want to cover, you know, not a lot, maybe a fraction of it, if that, but because I don't want to cover too much of this Jeff Sessions thing because it's all over the news. It's all over everywhere. And you probably know all about it. So the George Wilder Jr. Show doesn't really need to recap or go over any of this stuff, but we're going to mention it anyway, because we are about informing, you know. I'm not a journalist, as you can probably tell, but we try to cover some of the main topics that's happening out here in the world, because one thing about this show, about my show, it's about making the world a better place. And I think I've done that, not in so many ways, but I think the show has actually helped, motivated, educated, and empowered some of the listeners who have boldly come by and listen to the show. And that's great. That's beautiful. If we can reach one or two people, three people, 100 people, 1,000 people, 2,000, a million people, it will be, you know, that will be great. That would be great. I mean, in the terms of trying to turn someone around, you know, to better themselves, to better their lives, for themselves and their families, this is a great format. And we talk about everything on this show. It's not just politics. It's not just, sometimes politics does find itself engulfing everything. Depends on how, it depends on the magnitude of what's going on, you know. So, and we cover a lot of things. Right now, what I want to talk about when we come back, I'm going to talk about diabetes, cancer, and especially medications and exercise and all of that. It's going to have some sort of let me put it this way. It's all going to come together. And it's interesting. We were talking about it. I was talking about it before I even came on the air. And I was very excited because I said, wow, I have something to say. Finally. But, you know, it's all about making the world a better place. And any way you can make the world a better place, even if it's saying somebody, even if it's saying or telling someone to go pick up a book and read a book, you read a good book, that's making the world a better place, because you're gaining knowledge and you're getting smarter. Put it that way. You're getting smarter. All right. We'll be right back, folks.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. So I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
All right, we're back, folks. I want to say something about the bad weather that we've been having in the state of Illinois. A lot of downstate, not two small suburban downstate towns were devastated by tornadoes this week. And I think it's this town of Ottawa, and I think it may be the town of New Plate. And I was watching some film clips of the devastation, and it is devastating. It's a mess. So I want to pray for those people, and hopefully the people who are now homeless without anywhere to go. And it's always sad when you hear people who have lost everything and say, I'm homeless. I don't have anything. I've lost everything. That should remind you that it doesn't matter what you have, who you are, how much money you have in the bank. Everyone can become homeless. Anyone can become homeless. You know, I mean, even if you got a $50 million house, something happens, it burns up, it burns down, you're homeless, period. So we have to thank our lucky stars that it hasn't happened to us, but we have to kind of give of ourselves and help those who these kinds of things, these kinds of terrible things, those people that these things have happened to. So, you know, never say that it didn't happen to me, it happened to them, but it could happen to you, me, or anybody. And it, regardless of race, income, or anything, anybody at any time, at any point, can become homeless. And it's a scary thing. It scares you. And especially when people have lost everything. People have lost everything. I mean, they've lost everything. At least they have their lives, okay? At least they have their lives, and they're young, and they have the ability to, you know, get those things again. But you know what? If you die in a fire or something like that, you'll never get your life again. It's gone. At least the one that you've known, it's gone. It is totally gone. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I wanted to say something about exercise. Exercise. I want to say something about exercise because I think this is imperative, folks. I think this is just something that should be said all the time. And I've talked about this before on this show, maybe a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, maybe a year, you know. Exercise is very, very important. And there are just too many damn people out here who don't do it. And it is very important because exercise can prevent you from using medication. Exercise is your medication. You have to remember, folks, the pharmaceutical industry, these people are for profit industries. That means they're making money off of your sickness. They're making money off of your terminal illness. All of this could be avoided if we exercise each and every day, maybe for an hour. There are a few diseases, maybe a hell of a lot more, but I do know that cancer, diabetes, heart disease, these things are curable. Whether you have cancer and you're being treated for it, exercise will do wonders. You don't need all this cancer medication. You don't need all of this dropping pills and all of this kind of thing. All you need is exercise. Exercise. Stop making these doctors rich, because that's all they're doing. You go to CVS, you go in the back of the store, there's a pharmacy. You go to Walgreens, the back of the store, there's a pharmacy. Everywhere you go, there's a damn pharmacy where you can pick up your prescription drugs, drugs that will kill you. You mix them with another drug, bing. The drugs will kill you faster than the disease will. You got some doctors that will tell you that. The drugs will kill you, the prescription drugs. If you misuse them, if you take too many, if you don't take them, you know, and you think about the after effects from the drug, you know, there are so many of those. You know, there's more after effects from that particular drug than there are cures from that particular drug. But the point is, exercise can be your drug. It cures everything. Cancer, diabetes. Okay, one of the things about diabetes, you can be free of diabetes, as you probably know. You can be free of it. But some people have a hard time with it. They can't take not being able to eat ice cream or cake or candy bar or something like that, or too much fat where they gain weight. They have problems gaining weight, losing weight, pardon me. And a lot of this is hard on people because, you know, diabetes is a disease. It is a deadly disease, far as I'm concerned. There's people that, oh, no, it's not, it ain't gonna kill you. Yes, it will. But you can deal with it. You can learn to deal with it. As I've got through saying, some people cannot deal with it. And that's why a lot of people lose their lives. It just, the disease itself just overwhelms them. I mean, who wants to be picking their fingers? Who wants to be dropping pills and exercising? You know, but that's what is going to, a lot of times when you're taking medication for diabetes, you just, the taking the medication to try for the symptoms, I'm sorry if I can say this, try to stave off the symptoms of diabetes, but you're still going to have diabetes, you know. You're still going to have diabetes. Medication, insulin, and all of this stuff, you know, I mean, if you're taking all of this stuff, I mean, it's going to kill you. The medications, it will do it itself. And for diabetes, you don't have to take any medication. But if you have to and you need it and it's working, then take it. But it will never cure you from that disease. You'll never be cured from it because the medication just treats the symptoms. It doesn't make the disease itself go away. And what you want that disease to go away. Now, look, folks, I'm not a doctor, but common sense is just common sense. You know, and if I can back up a little bit, if you want to get rid of diabetes, cancer, heart disease, exercise. Exercise. If you want to avoid cancer, exercise. If you have heart disease, exercise, because that exercise is medicine for heart disease. Heart disease can be cured. It will go away. You don't need medicine because all you're doing is making the pharmaceuticals and the medical industry rich. They love keeping you sick. They want to keep you sick because every time that doctor writes you a prescription in that hospital room or that clinic, that's money going into that doctor's pocket from your sickness. Every time you go over to that in the back of that drugstore to get your prescription, that money is going into everybody who's working there that's filling your prescription for you. And you are going to continue to be sick because they love getting your money. You can avoid all of that by exercising every day. It works. It's a cure for cancer. It's a cure for diabetes. It's one of the cures, put it that way. It's a cure for diabetes. It's a cure for heart disease and many other diseases. You can stave off a lot of oncoming diseases with just 30 minutes a day, an hour a day, sometimes even 15 to 20 minutes a day, just exercising, period. Eating right, thinking positive, keeping your mind strong. You ever notice when you exercise, you can think a lot clearer. Your mind is clearer. You know, I mean, after you get through exercising, wow, you're ready to take on the world. But you have to do it. You don't have to go to some $50 to $100 gym membership when you can just get outside and just walk for 15 or 20 minutes. That's great. You can exercise in your own apartment, home, or condo. That's great. Instead of going to a doctor getting a prescription for something that exercise can take away for you. It's a waste of money. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're talking about exercising, folks, and the benefits of it. And also, I want to talk about, maybe later on, the benefits of drinking water. Water, plain old tap water. You know, It is great. I mean, I don't think you got to drink six glasses or cups a day, but, you know, you have to get close to that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It is just about 6:30, folks. One clock says 6:30, the other one says 6:29. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Google. Follow me right here on Block Talk Radio. And we're going to be talking about Jeff Sessions a little later on into the show. I'm not going to stay on it too long because everybody knows what's happening here. All right, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, George. This is Dr. Rosie Kuhn calling in.
Hey, wow. Thank you so much. I've got you here on my marquee here. And this is your second time back. I'm glad you chose to come back. And because she was so great and wonderful the last time. So I just said, hey, we should have her back. All righty. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, I like your subject. I can talk about anything, but talking about exercise and water, that's a good subject.
Yeah, it is, because you know what? That's fine, because a lot of people out there are not doing it. These simple things, exercising, drinking water, thinking positive, that can extend your entire life. They can extend your in life, don't you think?
That's right. And I'm in contact with a lot of seniors here on the island where I live, and a lot of their mental problems and challenges often have to do with the fact that they're not drinking enough water. So people who seem to be having some sort of dementia problem, if when they start drinking water, it clears up. And so not only does it affect in terms of, we all know we're made up of so much water, but it really impacts on our ability to think well and act well. And that's what else is there?
And it also, you look better. It clears up your skin. You look great.
if you're not drinking enough water and you're dehydrated, then your skin is going to look dull and not
dry.
Vibrant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question is what keeps people from doing what would make them feel better? What is it that makes them makes people not do what? Why do we do that? Why do we do what's not in our best interest?
I don't know. Laziness. Okay. Okay. Why do we do things that's not in our best interest?
That's a good question. I don't know. No.
Okay.
It's a question that, when I'm a life and business coach, and when people call me and hire me, it's generally they're doing things that are not in alignment with their highest truth and their highest knowing. And they can say, I know this isn't in my highest good. I know this isn't going to help me, be healthy or live in my well-being and my highest truth and be happy, but I can't stop doing it. And what is it? It's like there's what I call it a conflicting commitment. In a sense, we're committed to having a good life and being healthy and wealthy and wise, but at the same time, we're committed to something else, and that's a conflicting commitment or an underlying commitment. And that can be just, that's so powerful, obviously. That's why we have people who are couch potatoes, because there's a commitment to something greater than their well-being.
Now, go ahead.
I had a client a couple of days ago who's brilliant. She's really brilliant. But her in what she wants is a life where she's got freedom and flexibility and money and health. And she's living in impoverished, and she's sick, and she's in a relationship with a person that's highly dysfunctional. Wow, what has a brilliant person do that? And so when we looked at it, we saw how afraid she is of being self-reliant, how afraid she is of being accountable and living the life. She's very afraid of that because she's afraid of what she'll lose. So she lives a very dependent life, and it's very contrary to who she is and what her capacity is. So we got real clear with her. Yeah. And I mean, I know that place for myself because it's like, wow, if I get self-reliant, what's going to happen to my relationship with my partner? You know, I might leave him. Like, that would be awful. That's scary. So that would stop her. Or, yeah.
Is this relationship, is it abusive physically or verbally or?
Nope. It's not that. But he's got PTSD and he's alcoholic, and he has his times where he's functioning and good, and there's other times where he's not. So but there's a level of dependence that my client has on him and on her parents to take care of her. And so she likes being taken care of, but at the same time, you know, this is that commitment, like, we like being taken care of, but at the same time, it doesn't fulfill our soul, our heart's desire. And there's that dilemma of, if I don't exercise and I don't, if I'm not strong and powerful, or if I'm not strong and capable, you know, I can get away with stuff. And it's just, it's fascinating when people talk about what they really, what they want, and then what they really want to get away with.
Yeah.
You
it's,
know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I really do. And, you know, it's something you, and this show is all about trying to get people motivated, get people being proactive, get people to take charge of their lives, get people to exercise, get up off the couch.
Yes. So here's the really fascinating thing, George. So I'll use this particular client as an example, but I think this is true for 100% of your viewers, which is she is creating the reality. She is utilizing her thinking and her actions. She's utilizing her brilliance to keep her and sustain this relationship as a dependent person. So she has everything she desires. She has everything she needs to make the choices to get her in the lifestyle that she wants. She has everything she needs, and she's masterful at creating the reality that she's in, you know, sick and impoverished. And you could see how she's doing that. She's creating that. And not so consciously, but it's still there, that those abilities to create are hers. And so every single one of us. Yeah.
So basically you're saying she's in the situation that she wants to be in.
Well, her higher commitment is to be dependent and not be self-reliant. That's her higher commitment. And so if every person asks themselves, so what am I really committed to? If they were really truthful with themselves and looked at where they're at on the couch with the chips, they'd say, I'm committed to not being anything other than what I'm in. I'm committed to not dealing with my issues. I'm committed to not going into discomfort. Because if I get outside and exercise, it might hurt, or it might, you know, something's going to happen, and I don't want to be with that. I want to stay safe. And if people were really honest with themselves, they'd say that. I want to stay safe in my stuff. And I know that's true for me. I have to be really vigilant with myself to say, what are you doing here with this chocolate ice cream? You know, what are you doing? Yeah. But I have a commitment. I have a commitment that's greater than the one that says safety, stability, security, and invulnerability. That's, you know, I'm committed to seeing what's the fullest potential of this human being. What's that I'm pointing to in my face? What's the potential of this being inside me? Yeah. What's possible over the next, I'm turning 65 in a couple of months. It's like, what's the possibility for this being in the next 30 years, even, you know, if I live that long? Well, but wow, that's huge. Rather than saying,
happy birthday.
Hey, thanks. Thank you.
No problem. I'm right there with you.
Not until April. Yeah. But it's like, what am I capable of? And rather than saying what, looking at the decline or look at what's, you know, it's like, oh, I'm 100 pounds overweight. It's going to take a lot of work to get this off. And it's like, well, what are you committed to? It's hard living that life. It's hard living. And this is what's true for most of us who are unhappy in our life. It's hard living this way in a, as an unhappy person. And so you can live unhappily.
It is.
Yeah. So it's hard to live unhappily, and maybe it's hard to live happily, but it's up to you. You get to choose. I'm
right.
learning how to live
you
happily.
You have to make that choice. Yeah.
You have to make that choice. And but if it's if there isn't the if you're not able to see what the commitment is, then it's we get lost in it. And the commitment has to be big enough and more and compelling enough to get us up and get our shoes on. I remember I think the guy who and I don't know who this was, but the guy who first ran the 4-minute mile, he said the hardest part of the whole training was getting his tennis shoes on, his running shoes on. Totally get that. Just get the shoes on, get out the door. Like, that's all. And just one step at a time. Get the shoes on. So everyone, even the, you know, the greatest athletes have that moment where it's like, I don't want to do this. But it's like, what am I committed to?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the, am I committed to staying safe and uncomfortable in my you know, in my unhealthy state, or am I willing to see what's possible just getting out 5 minutes? Or, you know, I live in a very beautiful place, so it's really important. And it's part of my choices, you know, like my lifestyle choice to live in a place where there's fresh air, lots of green, lots of room to walk and just be in nature. And it's so important. And there's a... There
it
was
is.
A saying I heard, which I loved, which was everybody should be outside at least an hour a day. And people who are really busy,
exactly.
they should be out 2 hours a day.
That's what I try to do. Yeah, and I try to tell other people to do that, you know. And I get out there, enjoy the outside, enjoy nature. I mean, get you at least 15 to 20 minutes worth of exercise just walking. And even that will brighten up your outlook for the rest of that day, you know?
That's right. And it doesn't, you know, when we say, George, when you say, get out there and exercise, it's like, even if you just walk, just meander and saunter and look at the flowers, look at the greenery, look at the grass, because it's the nature, the natural world is so generous in its gifting. We don't have to work hard to feel better. We can work as hard as we want to, but we don't. We just have to be present to that which is greater than ourselves. And nature is the universal source of all. Nature is the universal source of all that is. We step outside,
and it's
we're in it when we're
and
in
it's,
it, but we're outside. We go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and it's that medication. I was going to say it's that medication that you don't need to go to that pharmacy that to pick up. You know, because exercise is.
That's right.
It is number one.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Exercise and actively engaging in the world around you. You know, we think that the world around us is what happens in front of this computer screen, but it's so much more. You know, I have this beautiful little dog, and I have to be mindful about wanting. I want to engage with her, but get away from the screens and play with her, because that fills my heart. That fills my soul.
Yeah.
And that's the question is if, you know, exercise, but it's like for what purpose? For what intention? It's got to fulfill your soul, your heart's desire of some sort.
Yeah, it does.
And what is that?
Yeah.
And we don't know
Rosie,
that.
Can you talk
you know,
about
I see your
book.
Picture. Sure. I talk about the book Self-Empowerment 101. I've had a lot of books. I pulled another one out, but that one is really good for people to look at because it's looking at what's important to me enough that I'm going to get out there and make a difference for myself in my life. And the thing I love about this book, I wrote it when I was creating a coaching training program, which I've been running for a very long time. But this is like, it has hundreds and hundreds of coaching questions related to who I am and how do I empower myself? Do I empower myself to be miserable because we're in people empower themselves to be disempowered. But every time we make a choice to stay on the couch or put our tennis shoes on, we are empowering ourselves. I'm empowering myself when I grab another cookie. I'm empowering myself when I grab a glass of water. And we're never not empowering ourselves. We empower ourselves when we think a depressing thought. We empower ourselves when we think a happy thought. So it's like, how do we choose which thoughts we're going to think? And what's important enough to me that I'm willing to choose a different set of thoughts, one at a time, one moment at a time? Mm-hmm. And it's not about, oh, here's, I'm going to lose 50 pounds in 3 weeks. It's like, what am I doing in this moment so that this is impacting me in a way that's going to make me more. It's like every time I make a cool choice, a cool as in like, wow, I actually did what I set out to do, I feel better about myself. It makes, and it allows me to make another cool. Hey, if I can make that choice, I can make maybe this choice in this moment. But it's not about the future. It's about how, what am I doing in this moment? I'm putting my tennis shoes on now. And I have a dog who looks at me and says, are you putting your shoes on yet?
I was going to say, therefore, a lot of the things that you write in your books, you have experienced.
Yes. If I haven't experienced it, then I pretty well don't write about it. And if I haven't, if I don't have, in my, in the same with clients is that my clients are, we're working together in a sense of, if I haven't experienced it, then I can't coach to it. And there's a story about Gandhi. Where some people came to his house, and the woman said, Gandhi, would you please help my son? He's got a disease, and it's caused by sugar. And Gandhi said, come back in 3 weeks. Yeah. And the woman comes back, and so Gandhi works with the child, and the child gives up sugar. I mean, that's like the short story. And they go, why did you wait so long? And he said, I had to get myself off sugar first. It's like, I got to do the work myself first.
Oh, wow.
And it's really, really important as a leader – as a leader or as a guide or a coach is that we actually are walking our talk so that you, and I, another book that I've written is called Cultivating Spirituality in Children. And that's really about how do we as grown-ups walk our talk? How do we be the reflection of what we want our children to see and perhaps then model, role model, you know, reflect that for them. So when I'm sitting on the couch, or I remember my mom always saying, she had 9 kids, I was 6. And she goes, go outside. It's like, why go outside? You're inside. You know, you're reading your magazine. Why are you, you know, why are you outside? So if she was outside more, then that makes it so much more engaging for me to be outside because it's like I have a role model. So as grown-ups, we empower ourselves and we empower other people by being our, you know, ourselves, whether we're sitting on the couch or whether we're out playing with our kids, or playing with our dogs, whoever we're playing with or watching, or just being with ourselves. So it's that level of presence with what's, you know, I have this life here, and how is it that I could live so that it actually is the fulfillment of my human spirit? So most of my books are all in alignment with that. The Self-Empowerment 101, Cultivating Spirituality in Children, are all about how do I be this in my own life? And it's not about in the future. It's like, how do I be this in this moment?
Right
how do
now,
I, you know, even wiggling my toes is a form of exercise, you know?
Totally.
I'm drinking my water as I'm speaking to you. So.
Author Dr. Rosie Kuhn on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Can you tell us where we can find your books and go and download them and just devour them?
Sure.
Because this is a great subject.
Thanks, George.
This is a great subject.
Excellent. Thank
no
you
problem.
So much. My books are on Amazon. And also, you can go to my website, theparadigmshifts.com. You can Google Dr. Rosie Kuhn or Rosie Kuhn, and you'll find pages and pages of things that I've written. You can also find me on YouTube. I've got lots of wonderful videos. I am all over the place. And it's fun. It's fun. And that's
fun.
One of the coolest things. Go ahead, George.
No,
I was going to say.
No,
it's
I was
going to
say.
Things.
I just.
I'll say mine first and then you say yours. It's the coolest thing when you start exercising and drinking water and doing good things for yourself, because you're having more fun. And that's the bottom line. And then what were you going to say?
I was going to say the same thing, that it is fun. It is fun.
Yes.
And I do it myself. I'm like you. I could not talk about something if I did not experience it. You know, it is fun. It is great fun. And it's better for your, it's good for your health. Put it that way. Dr. Rosie Coon,
right.
Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for being on the show. You were
George.
Great.
George. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hope to see you again.
All right, sure will. All right, Dr. Rosie Coon on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She's going to come back. We're going to take a break right here, folks. We will be right back if we can find that. Let's see. Where is it? Here it is right here, folks. We'll take a musical break. We're going to be talking a little bit more about domestic violence here on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy, starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the third one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress, and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after, because I loved him, and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident, and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach, and I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic, and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question, why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview, I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask, because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser, because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying, as if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence, like me. Because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those three kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you for that. Thanks for that. That was in its entirety, because I never, ever do something like that without playing it in its entirety. That was a clip, and it's on a serious subject of domestic violence, and I think every woman in America should hear that, because it's coming from someone who experienced it. All right, let's move right along on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Block Talk Radio right here. Instagram, Twitter, I'm all over the place. And once again, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Rosie Kuhn, for being as always, being a great guest on the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right, everybody's talking about this. I mean, I'm going to pay a little bit of homage to it. Not much, but I'm going to say a little something about it. Jeff Sessions, the AG. The guy who is over the Department of Justice and the FBI of the United States, he's the nation's top cop, but now he's embroiled. As you probably know, if you're following this, he's embroiled. He's one of Donald Trump's picks, one of Donald Trump's cabinet picks for one of the highest offices in the land, AG, Attorney General to the United States, America's top cop. And now he's embroiled in a lie. I call it corruption, because I think all of them are corrupt. I mean, Trump is totally, this guy's got to be delusional. He has chosen so many of these people to fill these important cabinet posts who don't have any experience, none whatsoever. But yet, the latest one is Dr. Ben Carson, the neurosurgeon, who I always say he's a neurosurgeon in need of a neurosurgeon. He's been planted into one of these crucial posts, I believe it's housing, and he knows jack about it. Just like Trump knows jack about running for president of the United States, being president of the United States. These people have no experience, just like this Betsy DeVos, if I can say her name. I can barely say it because it doesn't roll off my tongue too well. Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education, she knows jack about education. And it goes on and on and on and on. In his administration, he's appointing, in my estimation, from my view, he's appointing thugs to these important agencies, U.S. agencies. Thugs, that's going to ruin it. That's going to upend America as we know it. And now Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, picked by Donald Trump, confirmed by the Republicans in Congress, he's now have recused himself from any Trump campaign probes because he got caught lying about his affiliation with Russia. You know what? I just think this goes to the very, very top. I think just about everybody in Trump's circle or has been in Trump's circle has had something to do with Russia. And they're all covering it up. The Republicans in Congress, they are covering it up also, because they are refusing to look into the matter. They're refusing to dig deeper because they like Trump. They like what he's doing. They like that he's an asshole. You know, they love that. He has no experience. Donald Trump is learning on the job. And this is what a lot of these other people are going to be doing, learning on the damn job. That's crazy. I've been working all my life, and I've never gotten a job without any experience. You know? But the highest jobs in the land are given out like candy to people who are inexperienced. Don't know jack. I don't know if some of you heard, you might have heard that Oprah Winfrey, the talk show host queen, she said she, it seems like she was giving some thought to running for president of the United States. I mean, if you watch some of the clips, if you read some of the articles, it seems as if she was giving some thought to it. And some people were saying, go right ahead and run. But a lot of people were saying, no. She doesn't have the experience. She needs experience. Look at Donald Trump. He doesn't have any experience. It proves every day he doesn't have experience. But this guy, he was in business. So Oprah said, well, if Donald Trump can do it, I can do it. He has no experience in government. I have no experience in government. So he can be so she feels that she can be president. I do too. I say go for it. I say go for it. I mean, if someone like Donald Trump can be president of the United States with no job experience, nothing whatsoever, but a lot of money, then I'll say go for it, because she's got just as much, if not more, money than Donald Trump. So I say, Oprah, go for it. But there's a lot of people out there saying no. I wouldn't say no, because, you know, Donald Trump is in office, and he's talking about being reelected. Not if Oprah runs. Not if she runs. So I don't know if she's actually going to run or not, but there's been some talk that she may run. And then there was some talk, may have been some talk later saying that she was not running. That's not confirmed. I don't know. I'm just saying what is out there. So I don't want anybody to think, well, George, it's just fake news. You know, I don't know, you know, but I do know that the clip that I saw earlier today on television with Oprah Winfrey herself saying that, wow, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do this. And I was going to MSNBC and I saw MSN.com. And there was Oprah saying that she's going to run. Okay, but this has to be confirmed, even if it's Oprah saying it, because it has to come from some really, really viable websites and news organizations for me to actually go on to promote it. But anyway, even if she's says she's running indefinitely, it's a great thing, I think. I know there's a lot of people that say, well, we can't have Oprah. She has no experience. We need somebody who knows their way around the block. Trump doesn't. He doesn't even know his way around Washington. Trump has no experience. And the other night he gave a speech to Congress, and everybody was saying, "Wow, it's a great speech. Wow, this is the night he became presidential." Give me a break. Only thing happened in that speech, and I didn't listen to it, but the only thing that happened in Donald Trump's speech to Congress the other night is that he had a more somber tone. That's it. He was cool, calm, and collective as he talked. That was all. It was the same old Donald Trump with the same old ideas, warped ideas, and his warped vision of America, but he was saying this in a somber, calm manner. He wasn't shouting. He wasn't pointing. He wasn't being obnoxious. He was just calm and collective. You probably would agree with that, but overall, he practically said nothing, but the Republicans fell all over themselves. Oh, it was a great speech. Oh, he did a great job. No, he didn't. He just sounded a little bit better. You know, he sounded much, much better. Calmer, very light and easy tone. In my estimation, that wasn't Donald Trump. That was somebody else pretending to be Donald Trump, you know. But anyway, they're saying that it was a great speech. But with this Jeff Sessions bombshell, and I'm calling it a bombshell, with this Jeff Sessions bombshell, that speech to Congress, no matter how calm and collective it was, it came crashing down because of this new revelation about this guy lying to Congress. And some Democrats are calling for his resignation. Some people are calling for jail time. This is just crazy. I mean, I don't see how Trump can govern for the next 4 years with all of this hovering over him. And there is no doubt about it that Trump himself has colluded with Russia. He's done it several times. He's done it on camera, on video. We got it. But the Republicans are not going to pursue this. And I want to say to all the Republicans, and I want to say to the constituency of all those Republicans, vote their asses out come 2018 November. Vote them all out. A lot of these assholes won't even show up there, won't even show up at their town halls because they're afraid that they're going to be they're afraid that they're going to get a mouthful from their voters, from their constituency. So these cowards will not show up. And for every one of them cowards that will not show up to those town halls to address the problems that their voters want them to address should be thrown out, kicked out to the curb and sped on. These people are awful. The Democrats, they are looking at this and they're smelling blood for 2018, November 2018. And they are right on the money. These guys are going to be voted out on their asses. But they don't care. They don't care. It's all about their party. The Republicans in Congress, they are thinking about their party. They're not thinking about the people who voted them in office. To hell with those people. They're not thinking about the entirety of the country. They're thinking about their party. Their party. They don't give a damn if their constituency constantly telling them and wanting them and shouting and screaming at them to investigate Trump. They don't care. They're out of there. And they know it. Or they should know it. They're going to know it. I'm pretty sure that the phones are ringing off the hook on Capitol Hill, blasting some of these Republicans who do not show up, who refuse to show up at their town halls because they feel that they may be uploaded on YouTube and the video going viral. That's crazy. Those people put those assholes in office and they are accountable to their voters because their voters gave them their job. Their voters gave them great health care that their voters gave them great health care, and now these people want to take away their health care. A lot of the Republican voters are saying, hey, do not repeal Obamacare. Don't repeal it. Fix it. And the Republicans are saying, no. Or they're saying nothing at all. But I have a feeling they're going to try and rig the I have a feeling they're going to try and actually rig the election for 2018 so they can be reelected, even if their constituency vote against them. Donald Trump has been talking about rig for so long, the Republicans are going to use it. They're going to use it. And I hope Oprah Winfrey does run for president. I really do. And because I think she may not be have the experience, but she's totally qualified. Trump is not qualified and he doesn't have the experience, but he does have the money and he does have people around him who are licking his feet. Trump loves people who kisses his butt. That's what he loves. I mean, if you don't kiss his butt, he's going to talk about you. He wants people that's going to do what he wants them to do. You know, he's too used to being the boss, too used to telling people what to do, not to do, you know, and they're doing it in Congress. The Republicans are falling in line with Trump, even though Trump has committed crimes against America. But the Republicans refuse to investigate, refuse to impeach the guy. Even though the entire United States is saying, hey, investigate him. But they're not going to do it. They're not going to vote to investigate him. And that's one of the reasons why they remove Sessions. They remove Sessions because that would be a conflict of interest. How can Sessions investigate the White House when Jeff Sessions is in on the corruption? Wow. Stay tuned, folks. This is just getting started. And I, like I said before, I don't see how Trump could actually govern with all of this hanging over his head. This is a cloud. This is a cloud. Russia, Russia, Russia. I remember clearly Trump saying, Russia, if you're listening, hack her emails, 300,000 emails, and send them to me. And that's exactly what they did. And we all know that Trump is involved with this big time. We know that. We know that.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who's a crawl.
We got a few seconds left and on the show, and I want to say this: some veterans call foul on Trump for wearing flight jacket and admiral's hat, and he is really getting some flack on Twitter for this. Let me read one of them for you, folks. As a veteran watching a five-time draft dodger coward saluting a Marine guard is the FCC impeached this cowardly bastard. Now, whoa. All right. Thanks, folks. Bye-bye.
Pissed. You were raped.